Good morning. It is VBS week, and that means Elliot is preaching from a different place. So let's see. I thought, you know, it might be a little distracting for me here, but most importantly, I intend to not trip and fall while I'm preaching to you this morning. And so I want to be here for that. We have 37 devices tuning in with us right now, so we welcome you and glad that you're worshiping with us. This month, our family devotional monthly memory verse, Psalm 107:1. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His steadfast love endures forever. Isn't that great? All right. And so we're talking this week during VBS. The kids are going to be learning about God. They're going to be seeking the one true God. And so along those lines, I wanted to talk this morning about evidence for God and the world we live in and how in our current world, you know, science is king. You'll see headlines or hear people trying to prove a point and they'll say, well, you know, evidence says. And so that's the world we live in. Well, we're going to look at some of that this morning, and I think it's interesting, and I hope you do too. Let's start in Jeremiah chapter 29. This is a verse that you're familiar with, I think part of it for sure, and then, but I want you to notice the end of this passage. So Jeremiah's a prophet writing to people who are, we're talking about a time when God's people would be in captivity because they were unfaithful to God, but then God will bring them back. So verse 11, he says, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not evil, to give you a future and a hope. He's talking about after captivity. God says, I'm not giving up on you. I have great things in store for your future. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me and I'll hear you. You will seek me and find me when what? When you seek me with all your heart. When you seek me with all your heart. Sometimes in the mornings at my house, I get up first, usually, but Stephanie has to leave first, so she has to leave before I do. So well, right about the time that she's frantically trying to get out the door, I'm trying to be in my recliner with my coffee and my phone trying to wake up in a leisurely manner. Well, sometimes she'll be trying to find something, so she'll say, hey, do you see me? Can you help me find my shoes? It's not just any shoes, there's lots of shoes, but the shoes that she needs that day, you know, they're the brown ones with the mesh, with they're the light brown ones with the flats, the mesh, the open toe, closed toe. I mean, there's all these variables that I'll get up and I'll start looking in my area. And I'm looking, but what I'm really waiting on is for her to find them so I can go back and sit down and drink my coffee and play on my phone. So have you ever looked for something and you were looking for it, but you weren't looking with all your heart? Why is it people don't see God? And the answer is God has concealed himself to a degree in which it requires faith. Do you want to see God? If you want to see God, there's plenty of evidence. Plenty. But if you're not really seeking God from a pure heart, even an open mind, if you're not really seeking him, you may not find him. Because you're not truly trying to find him. You're not truly trying to see him and understand him. And incidentally, it's not like he hasn't given us, revealed knowledge to mankind, an amazing book that, by the way, has stood the test of time through all centuries of mankind, through so much criticism. It's still here. It still stands tall. It still stands up to scrutiny. But I want to give you a little more evidence for that this morning. So James chapter 4, if we go to James 4 and reading in verse 4, it says, you adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you suppose it is to no purpose that the scripture says he yearns jealousy? He yearns jealously over the spirit that he has made to dwell in us. God has put a spirit, an eternal soul in each of us, and God yearns jealousy. What does that mean? It means he wants a relationship. Have you ever wanted a relationship with someone, or maybe even just to get an idea, have you ever had a pet? Maybe you rescued a pet and you wanted this relationship, but that pet wasn't ready for a relationship with you yet. And you wanted it. That's God. He wants it with us, but he needs us to want that relationship with him. And that requires us to have some faith. By the way, everyone has faith. Let me hit that for just a second. Atheists have a lot of faith. Why? They don't know how we got here. They have theories of how evolution could have happened, and those theories have massive holes in them. They have no answer for how everything came from nothing. Where did it come from? I understand the idea of explosion, and I understand the idea of change over time. How did it all start? Where did it come from? So there's faith involved in that. Verse 6, let's read on. But he gives more grace. Therefore it says, God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Submit yourselves therefore to God. And I want you to kind of key on, there's an idea here of humility and submission. It's required for us to be in relationship with God. It's required for us to have faith in God. In other words, think of it this way. If there is no God, then who's at the top? Who gets to sit in the captain's chair if there's no God? Well, you and I do. And so to go from a belief that there is no, a faith that there is no God and say, well, maybe there is a God, I've got to get out of my chair. Because when there's no God, I'm top dog. But when there's a God, now he is. I have to have humility. I have to submit. All right, resist the devil, he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Do you feel close to God? Do you feel a closeness with God like you know him? And I don't mean like you know about him. We have knowledge about God. We learn it from the Word of God. Do you have a closeness with God like you know him? I'm not talking about him speaking to us audibly. I'm talking about seeking him and drawing near to him. Scripture says, if I draw near to him, he'll draw near to me. Am I drawing near to him? Am I seeking him? I may be following him, but am I seeking close relationship with him? That's something for you to take away today and think about. Am I really seeking God? I mean, yeah, I'm doing some things in life, and I want to be a faithful child of God. I mean, we're here this morning, aren't we? But am I really seeking him in my daily life? Our young people, and even our younger adult our young adults, have been told in their education that there is no God. They've been told the earth is, and the universe is millions and billions of years old. And so, incidentally, what does evolution and millions of years do to a creation of Adam and Eve? There's a problem there. And so they've been fed this information that there is no God, and given supposed scientific evidence for that, and it's been drilled in them. It's been drilled in them. To the point that sometimes a person feels like, well, now my faith and science are in conflict with each other, but in reality, they're not. And I want to share something with you this morning I think is pretty amazing. It's called the James Webb Space Telescope. If you've heard of that telescope, you've heard it in a headline, maybe you've not really read or studied about it, but when I say James Webb Space Telescope, that rings a bell, even a faint bell. All right, I think this telescope and its results, by the way, there are only a few of you that raised your hand if you didn't know. So if this is totally new to you, you're in good company. I think it's more amazing than when man walked on the moon. And I encourage you to read about it. I think God's hand is involved in it. I believe that, as odd as that may sound. But this telescope was built over 17 years. So $10 billion was spent on this. The mirror section, that's what you're looking at, this gold section. These are mirror panels in a honeycomb with honeycomb shaped plates, but this section is about 21 feet in diameter. It's pretty big. These honeycomb plates have to go up in a rocket, which they did. This is orbiting right now. This is in space. They had to fold up in order to be launched in a rocket. They have to unfold in space, and they have to be within a precision. The alignment of them has to be so precise, it's within a margin of error of the width of a human hair. Now read about this. It is unbelievable the human knowledge and technology that produced this. They had to make it to, this is what it looks like in space with, it looks like it's, I don't understand it all, but that's what it looks like, okay? They had to make it too large because in space it's cold and so it would shrink, and they had to calculate that and be exact. In fact, they made a list of things that could go wrong. This all, everything had to go right in so many different ways. They made a list of what could go wrong, and any one of these would make it inoperable, or it would pretty much scrub the mission. I mean, it'd be a total waste. Incidentally, they cannot work on it. The Hubble telescope orbits in the same kind of way and place and space as the International Space Station. So the Hubble telescope can be accessed, and they can fix something on it. This they cannot. Once they launched it, cannot go work on it. And so 344 things could have gone wrong. None of them have. It is sending back images of deep space that is, incidentally, more amazing and better than they had hoped. That's one point where I think God's involved in this, besides just how impressive it is, a feat. So it orbits, I'll just hit you with, these are, I'll move on in a second. This is fascinating to me. Your eyes may be glazing over and saying, Elliot, get on with it. But you see where, now this is not to scale, obviously, but you see the sun, you see Earth and the moon around the Earth. This telescope orbits outside the Earth's atmosphere and outside where the moon orbits. And so it doesn't orbit the Earth. It just kind of hitches a ride with our gravity, and it goes around the sun like the Earth goes around the sun. It also has its own orbit that you can see drawn here. So its own orbit is outside this space so that the Earth or the moon never casts a shadow on it. That's why it's wider, because it operates with solar power. I just think that's amazing. It's fascinating that an instrument can buzz around in space and still stay connected to Earth's gravity so that we can keep communicating with it. I want to play a short video that tells a little more about it. So check this out.
Beyond the Earth, we see there is an incredible mass of space, likely limitless, which for the most part remains unexplored. But thanks to the many scientific researches and discoveries ongoing, we can at least appreciate the complexities of the world we live in as we question concepts about the universe and its formation, about our very own existence, and whether we are alone in this world or not. Questions like this have led to much research on space and investment in space technology. And so much has been done already with technologies like rockets and satellites orbiting our planet. Yet one of the biggest successes of astronomers and scientists alike in recent times is the James Webb Telescope. The James Webb Space Telescope, JWST, is a large space-based observatory designed to be the successor to the Hubble Space Telescope. It is a joint project of NASA, the European Space Agency, ESA, and the Canadian Space Agency, CSA. The telescope is named after James E. Webb, NASA's administrator during the Apollo program. The JWST is designed to observe the universe in the infrared portion of the electromagnetic spectrum, which allows it to peer through dust clouds and study distant objects with greater clarity than ever before. It has a prime.
I will show you in a minute some things that it has discovered, and that's really fascinating, and I think important for us to know and notice. But I'll give you just an example of it. it has sent back this image, and that galaxy at the bottom is similar to the Milky Way. That galaxy, which has a name of numbers and letters, it doesn't have a fancy name like Milky Way, but it is 1 billion light years away. They're able to see that far out, further out, because of infrared technology that they're using. At the speed of light, now light takes time to travel, but at the speed of light, you could travel around the Earth 7 times in a second. 7 times, 7 times, 7 more times. Speed of light is fast, of course, but it still takes time. And at the speed of light, if you traveled for a year, 10 years, 100 years, right? 1 billion years, you'd get to that galaxy. It's amazing how massive the universe is that God created. It's mind-blowing. Psalm 8, verses 3 and 4 says, "When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon, the stars which you have set in place." Incidentally, to the naked human eye, we can see about 5,000 stars. Cavemen, you know, back in time when mankind was more rudimentary, the native person on this planet, in much simpler times, could see stars and see evidence of God. It's amazing. You look at the night sky; those are all suns. And you look at that, and it's so amazing. And now we, in this year of 2023, we see so much more. Well, it's more amazing how big our God is. But God has set all those in place. What is man that you're mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him? Psalm 147, I think a great psalm. There are two kind of parts of this that may sound different topics. Verse 3, he heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. God cares about us. He's very far away in a sense. He's outside our universe. He's in another dimension. He's spirit, not flesh, but he's very near us. The universe is massive, but we are made in his image. And he cares about each one of us. He cares about the brokenhearted. But look at this. On the other end of kind of the topic, verse 4, he determines the number of the stars and gives to all of them their names. I'll come back to that. Verse 5, great is our Lord and abundant in power. His understanding is beyond measure. The Lord lifts up the humble. So let's pause there. God's understanding, whoever made all this has to have massive understanding. It's beyond our imagination. What do we need to do? We have to have some humility. In order to have faith, we have to have some humility. He gives names to all the stars. We can see about 5,000 with the naked eye. That's impressive that God would name all of them. If I told you there were billions and billions of stars, that's a lot of stars. Well, the reality is, let me back up for a second. Each one of these are galaxies, and that's a small, small sliver of the universe, and that's just as far as we can see. The truth is there are billions and billions of galaxies that have billions, literally, and billions of stars in them. We don't have words to communicate how many stars there are in the created universe. Isn't that something? It makes my mind hurt. And it makes my mind leap for joy at the same time. I'll hit you with one real quick. I'll speed through this one. But secular scientists like to talk about how they haven't found God. Where's God? And so therefore there is no God. I'll give you a quick one. DNA. We now know a number of things about DNA that we didn't in the past, but every cell in the human body has DNA in it, about 6 feet of DNA in every cell in your body. If you stretched out all the DNA in the human body, it could stretch all the way to our sun and back. A conservative number is 53 times. That's in one human body. DNA. What is DNA? It's information. You've seen pictures of DNA, what it looks like. And so it's chemicals, but it's information, and it tells the cell what to do. In fact, we can mess with DNA in a cell, and it will change what it does. It's information. It's intelligence. If there's ever been evidence in a creator, is it not DNA? Okay, so remember that. The goals of the James Webb telescope. So why did they make this? Two primary goals. Number one goal, they wanted to look so far into space. Now let's think about this for a second. Light takes time to travel. Even though it travels very fast, it takes time to travel. And if you could look far enough out, even though light travels fast, if you could look far enough out, you would be seeing light as it was in the past, because it takes time to travel to us. Make sense? And so if you look far enough out, theoretically, if light takes that long to travel to us, theoretically, what you should be seeing is not as that galaxy is now, but you should be seeing that galaxy as it was years and years ago. Okay? And so with that belief and understanding, this telescope, they're trying to look back in time. And what they see in these very distant galaxies, to them, should be the very early parts of the creation of our universe. There's a belief with the Big Bang that the Big Bang not only exploded everything, but then now those things took time to evolve. Suns, galaxies, elements, all these things took time to evolve. And so when they look back in time, they expect to see, with this telescope they already have results in, they expect to see baby galaxies. Because according to their theory, Big Bang, time, back then, everything took time, we expect to see little baby galaxies. Okay, remember that. The second thing they're trying to find is what's called exoplanets, which is simply planets that are outside of our solar system. So they're not looking at Mars and Venus and Jupiter anymore. They're trying to find an Earth-like planet. So in the exoplanets in the Milky Way, they're trying to find planets that are like Earth that could sustain life. They want to find life. Have you heard that? They're trying to find water. They're trying to find anything on another planet that is anywhere close to life. They want to find life on another planet. I'm not even talking about aliens. I'm talking about vegetation, life. Now, in particular, human life, of course. But why are they trying to find, they'll call them Earth-like planets. Now, incidentally, Venus is an Earth-like planet, similar size to the Earth, but it's not inhabitable, not even close. They're trying to find planets that could produce life. Why? Because if there are other planets like Earth with life on them, then we are not that special. And if we're not that special, it fits their belief that all this is an accident. There is no God. If, however, we don't find life on other planets, and the Earth is very, 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 very special and unique, that points to a creator. Does that make sense? So, years ago, they would have predicted, because they now are able to study about 5,000 planets in total, maybe more than that. But let's say 5,000 planets, they're able to see and know some things about them. And years ago, they would have predicted maybe 1 in 10 would be Earth-like. Why 1 in 10? Because our solar system has 8 planets. If you count Pluto, which I still do, I'm still a big fan of Pluto, so we have 9. So how many in our solar system are Earth-like? 1 in 9. So if you think of it, 1 in 10... We've now looked at 5,000. Guess how many are Earth-like? They would have predicted 500. That's 1 in 10. 500. Zero. Zero. So this telescope is looking further. They would love to find exoplanets that have an atmosphere that could support life. All right. Let me hit this point real quick, and then I'll show you. I'll run through what they've discovered and some predictions that were made about that. think about if we could go back in time and we could go to day one with Adam and Eve and we could bring a buddy with us, and the buddy is a secular atheist scientist, a scientist who doesn't believe that there's a creator, that everything happened naturally. We bring that secular scientist with us and we're going to look at Adam and Eve on day one. Boom, here we are, Garden of Eden. We see Adam and Eve. How old are they? Now, I already told you they're day one, and you and I are going to say they're one day old. But if you're the secular scientist and you're in the Garden of Eden, how old would they look? I'm guessing 20 years old, maybe? 30? 20, 30? I'm 52. I don't think they look 52. I think they look, let's call it 20. So as a secular scientist, if you looked at Adam and Eve, how old would you say they were? You would say they were 20, and you might even give a range. We're going to say they're, 18 to 27 and feel pretty confident about that based on how they look, correct? And yet, they would be one day old in reality. Do you see the difference between, so both the creation scientist who would say, well, I don't know how old they are. They might just be a few days old because God created this. They start with a belief that God created, so they interpret the data differently. If you start with the belief that there is no God, well, then they've got to be years and years and years old. They have to be because they grew from this. And so that tells you the difference in how data is interpreted by scientists. All right. So Dr. Jason Lyle, I want to tell you about him real quick. So he's a creationist. He's a part of a great resource connected with the resource Answers in Genesis. If you want to look at answersingenesis.com, answersingenesis.com, a wonderful resource of creation scientists of all different backgrounds that produce a lot of good information. But Dr. Lyle, before this telescope sent back images, he made some predictions. Okay? And so, to quote him, he said, secular astronomers expect that the Webb telescope will show galaxies in their earliest stages of formation. They expect to see the earliest stars in the process of formation and in the process of assembling into galaxies. Rather than galaxies just starting to form, I expect to see fully formed, fully designed galaxies at unprecedented distances. It's just like the Adam and Eve deal. If you and I were to go back on day one of Adam and Eve, how would we predict they look? Full grown. Why? We've already told what Adam and Eve would look like. Full grown. So he goes on to say, this will force secular astronomers to adjust their estimates of when the earliest galaxies formed, pushing them much closer to the supposed Big Bang. We might see headlines like, Webb discovers that galaxies form much earlier than previously thought. This is what he predicted. So here's some headlines. I'll run you through just a few of these. These are newsworthy. Headline in a newspaper, but to science people, these are big. The first galaxies may have formed much earlier than we thought. Space Webb telescope keeps finding galaxies that shouldn't exist. Captures ancient galaxies that theoretically shouldn't exist. Six galaxies shouldn't exist. Spots galaxies from the dawn of time that are so massive they shouldn't exist. On and on. This is the last one I'll show you. This is Popular Mechanics. James Webb found some galaxies that technically shouldn't exist. Why should they not exist? Because they've already concluded there's no God. Don't miss that. Understand that. They've already put their faith and stood firm, there's no God. So they will not consider. In other words, these results that came back and showed, hey, they're fully formed. Now, the Bible thumpers on the side are like, duh, that's what we expect to see, fully formed. And this Dr. Lyle, he predicted it, went on record before the results came back and said, they're going to come back fully formed. And it's going to blow people's minds. Why? Because they've already concluded there's no God, that it was never created, that it had to come about naturally. Now notice the subheading, don't miss this. And now we are rethinking what we know about the ancient universe. Let me read that slowly for you. We are rethinking what we know. Does that not strike anyone funny? We know what we know until something proves it wrong. And instead of going back and saying, well, maybe there's a God. Maybe someone created all this. They say, ah, we're just going to readjust what we know. If you don't think people are biased, if you don't think scientists, secular and atheist scientists are biased, if you don't think science conclusions are biased, then you're misunderstanding the fact that people start with a conclusion and a premise, and then they interpret. So, why doesn't God prove himself to us? And the answer is, God allows us to have faith, to either choose God or to deny him, and he gives us so much evidence, there is so much that we can put our faith in him, but we can also choose not to. And so, we'll conclude with this passage, Romans 1:18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. What does that mean? When you sin, you feel guilt if you believe there's a creator and there's morality and absolute truth. Well, that doesn't feel good. And so it's painful. And that involves future judgment. So how do you get around that? Well, maybe there's no God at all. Can you see the attractiveness to a belief that there's no God? It's very attractive. That means you and I are God. It's party all the time. Do what you want because there will be no judgment if there's no God. And people love that idea. Verse 19, for what can be known about God? So he's withholding so much, but he's showing us some. What can be known is plain to them because God has shown it to them. His invisible attributes, namely, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in where? In the things that have been made. In the things that have been made. So I'll conclude with this idea. This telescope allows us to see more of what God's made in amazing detail. And it took so many things had to go right. I think God helped them. And the images are coming back better than scientists had hoped, than the creators of this had hoped. And I think God's hand is in it. And I think God is saying, look, I'll let you see more. Will you believe then? Will you believe then? So young people, I want you to know, when your teachers tell you there's no God, and they try to give evidence, I want you to be able to understand, they've already concluded, they've already decided they don't want to believe in God. And that's how they've interpreted everything they've seen. We're going to close with a song of encouragement this morning. And if you're here this morning and something is on your heart and you're struggling with it, this is a time that we'd love to stop and pray for you. If there's someone here this morning and you're not ready to face God's judgment and you need help with that, maybe someone wants to give their life to Christ and become a Christian, be saved. We'd love to help you with that if you would come while we stand and sing.
O Lord my God, when I lost someone, my soul, my Savior. Great.